Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And Jim, the good martini is not just a good martini. It's a great martini, and I believe it's one that you don't even have to be a conservative to appreciate. In fact, I think every American will love today's good martini. A terrorist from ISIS recently took a selfie of himself and posted it online. Shortly thereafter, U.S. intelligence, which heavily monitors social media accounts from ISIS members and supporters, managed to pinpoint an ISIS headquarters building in Syria by using the selfie photo as a reference point. According to Air Force General Hawk Carlisle, airmen from Hurlburt Field, Florida, in the 361st Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance Group were the first to pick up on the photo. The quote says from General Carlisle, "The guys that were working down out of Hurlburt, they're combing through social media and they see some moron standing at this command. And in some social media, open forum bragging about the command and control capabilities for Daesh and ISIL. And these guys go, we got an in." So they do some work. Long story short, about 22 hours later, that very building, three joint direct attack munitions take that entire building out. So, Jim, for all the gripes we have about not doing more in the air campaign, and I think they're still very valid, this is a pretty awesome story.
Greg, where do I go online to like this photo? Share. This is awesome. You guys got to do this more. You're going to get a lot more followers this way for a while. Talk about shutting down the account. What a great way of doing that. And in a way, by the way, for those of us who think these social media groups should shut down these terror groups, ISIS groups like that, we should be taking things, you know, maybe there's a certain advantage to letting these guys blab. You know, in fact, really, like, tell us more. What you doing these days? What's, you know, that little window on Facebook of what have you been up to? Really cut, you know, look, go ahead, fill in the blank, guys. Let's go. No, this is a fantastic story. As I'm reading this, Greg, I just have this nag. Please don't let this be fake or exaggerated, because first of all, Air Force General Hawk Carlisle? Seriously? When you have that, you kind of have to go into the military, don't you? Right? It's either that or you got to be like, you know, a quarterback or something like that. I like the fact that he referred this moron. Like that's very, you know, like I believe it's Ali al-Morani was the individual. And for anyone who didn't know, joint direct attack munitions, it's a big old bomb, basically. And we did three of them right there. And so just utterly fantastic. Yeah. Who says social media isn't great? It's building a better world, I would say, Greg.
Part of the good martini, in addition to an ISIS moron and I assume quite a few others of his friends being dead, that's a big win for us on the technological front. Let's move to the bad martini, because we have a definite setback on the technological front. And here's CNN explaining the story.
Two distinct attacks crept into the federal system, sophisticated and undetectable for months, all the while stealing information from the databases of virtually every government agency. Sensitive information from up to 4 million current and former federal employees now in the hands of hackers, including employees at the Department of Defense, the Social Security Administration, and even potentially President Obama.
And who is supposedly behind all this?
The suspect, according to authorities, a superpower, the People's Republic of China. According to officials, evidence points to hackers working for the Chinese military who may be compiling a massive database of critical information on Americans.
So CNN getting a little carried away with the sound effects online and the typing. But, Jim, this is not the first time we've seen this. We've seen multiple Russian attacks. And now, if this is the Chinese or whoever this is the most intrusive and widespread hacking of sensitive information we've seen ever.
Yeah. And over in the corner, my colleague Michael Auslin makes a case that Obama needs to respond to the Chinese government hack and all their other provocations, too. And he makes a really clear-cut case, you know, like we're you know, point of, besides this, they're warning our surveillance planes away from islands they're claiming in the South China Sea. They're putting airstrips on these islands. They're putting weaponry there. At this point, they're still supposed to invite the Chinese Navy to the 2015 RIMPAC, which is a large naval exercise in the Pacific. They sent a spy ship to that one last time. Just what do you have to do to not get an invite to RIMPAC anymore? And you kind of look at this and, you know, we're going to do our continued dialogue with Chinese. I mean, we basically got a president who is not going to take a hard line on anybody anymore. You just kind of see these continuing provocations. You say, it's really hard to imagine what it would take for the Obama presidency, all right, we're really taking a hard line with China. Because look, if they're not willing to take a hard line in Iran, they're not willing to take a hard line really just about anywhere, you know, like the trial of that American journalist or anything. What, they're going to get upset about hacking? I don't know. It just is a unnerving scenario we're seeing here, in which the other four hostile states engage in ever bigger provocations, and our presidency and our president and the administration just seem to shrug it off.
You know, we said early on in the administration, how's that reset with Russia working out? How's that pivot to Asia working out?
Well, when they say pivot to Asia, isn't like the pivot to Asia to forget about the problems in the Middle East?
Probably.
And then as you see all the problems in Asia, you pivot back to the Middle East to forget about the problems over, you know, eventually we're going to pivot to Antarctica. All right. What parts of the world are they not mad at us and we're not, you know, having all kinds of problems and things aren't getting worse?
Yes. And unless it's the NBA, we're going to get called for traveling pretty soon with all this.
There you go.
All right. On to the crazy martini now, Jim. And the New York Times has essentially put out an expose today that is sure to torpedo the Rubio campaign. I can't imagine something that's going to be more damaging than this. According to a search of the Miami-Dade and Duval County court dockets, the Rubios have been cited for numerous traffic infractions over the years for incidents that included speeding, driving through red lights, and careless driving. A review of records dating back to 1997 shows that the couple had a combined 17 citations, Mr. Rubio with 4 and his wife with 13. On 4 separate occasions, they agreed to attend remedial driving school after a violation. Dagger, New York Times. Time to close up the Rubio tent.
There are so many ways to go with this, Greg. The first among them being, if he's really that bad, let's give him a presidential limo. Let's make America a better place by getting Marco Rubio off the roads. But here's the thing is that, first of all, it says 17 between Rubio and his wife. First of all, 4 of them are Marco Rubio and 13 are Mrs. Rubio. Now, I don't think I've had 4, but I've probably had like at least 2 or 3 since 1997. That's, you know, that's not an unbelievably huge amount. I just saw John Podoritz just asked, I wonder how many traffic tickets Teddy Kennedy got. We're looking forward to the Times expose on Rubio removing the mattress tag. But here's the other thing, and I mentioned this on Twitter, and there's some folks who are not pleased with this, but I'm going to stick by my guns. Greg, don't you get 17 tickets automatically with the issuance of a Florida driver's license?
I usually have to get to a certain age, but yes.
Right. I mean, these are like speeding and things like that, but come on. Like, one, have you encountered a Florida driver? You know, I live in the D.C. area. I don't know if you do, but when you get cut off in traffic, Greg, what two states do you always see?
Maryland.
Yes, thank you. Maryland and Florida. And I used to get angry at those states. And then I suddenly realized, well, wait a minute. If you grow up in a place where everyone around you drives like a maniac, you probably adopt the ways of the maniac just to survive.
Right.
Probably takes like extensive conditioning and a re-education program. And, you know, as I point this out, there are people from Florida who, you know, a little defensive about this, but they're observing. We do get our 10-minute hurricanes every afternoon, right? So bad weather is a factor. You do have the issue of elderly drivers, you know, folks who end up being, you know, a little up there in years. Alligators in the road, admittedly, that could be an issue, things like that. By the way, you know, Hillary Clinton hasn't driven a car in 20 years.
Yes.
Do I stand by Marco Rubio? I am Marco Rubio, okay? In a way, this kind of makes the Times look kind of silly. I think everybody relates to Rubio. I don't think anyone really sees that he's some sort of menace. And it just seems like, you know, like compared to the wrongdoing of everybody else, particularly when you look, it's 4 for him. Okay, maybe Mrs. Rubio's got an issue. But again, it's you know, tough driving down. But, you know, I also like to make even more enemies. My understanding is that Miami drivers are even worse than the standard of Florida drivers. And so that might be just like, that's kind of like the Paris Dakar rally, right? I mean, that's just, you know, really, you know, exhaustive, difficult driving circumstances. So.
Hey, works for me. And now I'm thinking about all those Maryland drivers that cut me off. Every time. I don't even have to look
right?
anymore. I just
right.
know
you
it's
Virginia
a Maryland
drivers
car.
Aren't that bad. So it's not just the D.C. area. It's something about Maryland.
Yes. It's amazing. They're not that big of a percentage of drivers in Northern Virginia. Obviously, they're a decent percentage. But more people are from Virginia and some from the district. But every single time, it seems like it's a Maryland driver. So take that, Maryland and Florida. I'm sure we're very popular. Our polls will be skyrocketing in those states. Jim, as we exit today, we should point out that I will be out next week. Jim will be out the first 3 days of next week. But fear not, there will be new episodes with a guest host in my chair late next week. And then a week from Monday, we'll be back to our normal format. So, Jim, enjoy wherever you're going, and we'll reconvene soon.
I will, Greg. I'll be speaking in the Silicon Valley Conservative Forum out in California. So if you're out there, I mentioned it. I put it up on the site. Hope to see you there. And Greg, enjoy your travels.
Thank you, sir. He's Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Tune in again next week for the next 3 Martini Lunch.